Thank you for listening to the serialized podcast version of The Mark of a Druid, a fiction fantasy novel written and read by Rhonda R. Carpenter. I suggest that you start the story at the beginning, and to be sure that you get all of the episodes, go to themarkofadruid.com or rhondacarpenter.com. Episode 8, Chapter 12, The Open Sea. Cosmo sat poised on the oak headboard above Eve's sleeping body. He watched her mumble and turn over in her sleep. He sprang from his perch onto the down comforter and curled himself into a ball at her feet. The voyage from their home seemed slow. The coastline was an unending series of muddy banks, sandy inlets, jagged cliffs, and green-grassed meadows, all teeming with life. Athene was quick to point out the wild sheep and goats, once even a mighty stag on the shore. It had turned its impressive horns to the east and vanished over a hillock. Alian sang to the children aboard ship every day. They would ask often for the ancient song of Cyrenos. I'm a stag of seven tines. I am a wide flood on a plain. I am a wind on the deep waters. I am a shining tear of the sun. I am a hawk on a cliff. I am fair among flowers. I am a god who sets his head afire with smoke. I am a battle's wagging spear. I am a salmon in a pool. I am a hill of poetry. I am a ruthless boar. I am a threatening noise of the sea. I am a wave of the sea. Who but I knows the secrets of the unhewn dolmen? The men aboard ship sang with Alian while they fished. Orion glided close to the ship, all the while swooping and screeching at each new catch. The large raven landed on board whenever he tired. Sometimes he rested on Alian's outstretched arm, or roosted on Dubjila's shoulder. The simple sight of the huge bird drew stares from the others aboard ship. Athene called to Alian and pointed to the water. A glossy black otter swam playfully on the water's surface. The creature, dusky brown at second look, dove and surfaced, tail and head undaunting through the dark waters. Athene giggled and clapped her hands. The otter stopped and looked curiously toward Alian. Its big, dark eyes shone liquid blackness, and Alian gazed deeply into them. She found a sense of calm. For the first time in days, she breathed that sensation into her very toes. Tension shifted and abated from her body. Alian was centered and in that moment had no worries. The open sea would leave them little chance to see land-faring wildlife again for at least a day, maybe two. So the sisters scanned the shore and waited for the coastline to disappear from sight. Then when all she could see was water, her awareness broadened without warning. Alian's mind filled with images of rolling waves that were taller than the wild oaks of the forest. She witnessed pouring rain that pummeled the sea. Thunder rumbled in her ears, and she knew, as she always did, that a storm was coming. Dubjila, a storm draws near, said Alian. It moves quickly, this way, from the north. Her next words came hesitantly. This is the biggest storm I've ever felt. Her skin crawled as if trying to escape. Fetch the cage for Orion, commanded Dubjila. She held the raven's wings closed, holding onto him with such might the elder sister was afraid the healer would crush him. Alian, help me get him into the cage. Alian and Athene had fashioned a cage for the journey with twigs and rope. Alian opened the door, and Dubjila slipped Orion into the cage. Once the raven was secured, they made their way to Knut. He ignored their presence until Dubjila said, Tell him, Alian. A storm approaches from the north, father. Nonsense, girl. The sky is clear and the wind barely moves. Go back to your place now and leave the sailing to me. But father, I... Dubjila's hand on her shoulder stopped the argument before it could be spoken. The lass is never wrong about such things. You have been warned. Dabjila spun on her heel and shuffled Alion back to where they had left Athene. Dabjila patted Alion on the hand. If he is so deaf that he will not listen, then maybe the gods will show him their power. Alion, we must prepare for the worst. Fetch the waxed hides and a length of rope. The girl brought the items to Bid. Dabjila tied the rope around the elder girl's waist, then to her own and to Athene's on the other side. The younger girl was scared, but so were Alion and Dabjila. The wind lifted the waves, and like white claws they scratched at the hull. Salty spray filled the air. It landed on everything, leaving a strange, sticky feeling on the skin. A mass of smoke-colored vapor hung low at the horizon. A hazy gloom filled the blackish air. Pregnant clouds roiled above. A reflection of the internal struggle, ready to explode. The sail was rigid one moment and collapsed the next. Thunder clamored. The sky turned gray, then green, then black. Athene clung to her sister and shivered from cold. The ship lurched in mountainous waves, rolling from one to the next, higher and steeper. Boards moaned under the stress. Alion felt Athene's fear rising. Canute shouted orders to tie everything down and change course. "Farther out to sea," he bellowed, raising his voice over the roaring wind and spray of the sea. Alion held onto Athene, and Dabjila hung onto her. The ship pitched helplessly in ever-increasing swells. The animals pinned in the center of the ship shrieked ghastly sounds of fear which filled all ears. Several of the men spent time calming the poor beasts. One man, Kaun, sang to them while another, Lugus, blew into his wooden pipe, playing a slow, methodical rhythm that lulled the panic even from Athene. Kaun's light hair lashed at his sun-darkened face, a kind face, like that of a pet hound, loyal and trusting. Then lightning struck in all directions at once. Waves surged onto the deck, soaking already sodden garments. But when he rose to secure the rope that had come loose, Kaun was thrown to the rail. Lugus lunged toward him, falling in ankle-deep rushing water. Kaun's face turned toward his friend, nodding in acknowledgement, and then was gone. Lugus's lips moved in a silent goodbye or prayer. Then he rose stoically and tethered the rope to the animal's paddock. The sea was alive, and it claimed Kaun. Alion held fast to Athene while she cried herself out, wide-eyed and staring at the spot where Kaun had once sat, singing sweetly to horrified animals. Hours passed in a flash while a war was waged against the sea. The ship wrestled with the waves, skirmishing against driving rain and gale-forced winds which tore at exposed skin, leaving it raw and stinging. Athene's stomach roiled with each heave of the ship until she held neither food nor water in her belly. Canute looked on her with harsh eyes. Alion overheard him tell Dabjila that the child was weak. On the second day of the gale, he walked past the huddled females, stopped and glowered down at Athene. "Our people do not get seasick." Then he simply turned and strutted off, as if that would stop her belly from churning. Finally, the wind died slowly and the rain subsided, calming the sea. At the first opportunity, Dabjila whispered to the bird and released Orion from his cage. He quickly soared high above the ship. Athene, however, was no better. It had been 2 full days and half of another, without the child being able to hold even clean water in her stomach. Her skin was ashy green, her features ragged. Alion could not stop thinking of the last time Athene was gravely ill. 4 years it had been since the incident with the river's spirit. "You must do something for her, Dabjila. I can feel her growing weaker." The healer was already gathering her supplies. Orion screeched overhead and dipped his wing toward the water. Dabjila pointed to the bird and asked the man to retrieve some of the weed which grew in the sea. One of the men, Skeet, used the long pole to bring the thick, slimy, dark green strands on board. Skeet was a small man, stout of build, with little hair and even fewer teeth. The black stubs that remained in his mouth were completely exposed in a broad smile when he handed the weeds to Dabjila and bowed at the waist. Sea spirit will do, with some peppermint tincture. Alian, get the peppermint. She ran off and searched through the stores. She found the glazed clay bottle containing the peppermint. She had helped prepare it before the voyage. The leaves of the plant had been soaked and boiled, and then the fine oil had been skimmed from the top of the liquid. The oil had been preserved in a small amount of a powerful drink Kanut had brought from another land. Alian did not know the process for making the clear drink, but she knew that it was made of grain. It was very strong, foul-smelling, and hard to come by. Dabjila cut the sea spirit into tiny pieces, then crushed them between her grinding stones. She added 2 handfuls of water and 5 drops of the peppermint tincture, then set the mixture to warm, stirring it constantly. When it was warm, the dark green concoction no longer looked slimy, but smelled of peppermint and was the consistency of mush. Dabjila told Alian to have Athene eat all of it, but the little girl turned her head from side to side while Alian tried to coax her sister into eating. Athene complained loudly and moaned that her belly hurt. The child forced herself to gag whenever Alian pushed the cup to Athene's lips. Even after Alian's promise it would make her feel better, the youngster curled her lip and wrinkled her nose, refusing aloud. Kanut, with penetrating ice blue eyes, watched all of this. Alian had never known him to look at Athene with such cruelty. Something had changed, and Alian did not like it. He walked from the steering stick and stood at his youngest daughter's feet. He glowered down at her from his great height, white hair standing on end. "Athene, you dishonor me with your weeping. Now eat, or you will swim. By all the gods, eat!" he roared, fists clenched at his sides. The little girl looked up at her father with tears in her eyes and slowly nodded her head. Her bottom lip protruded in a pout. With her fear of the water, it was all that needed to be said. She choked down the contents of the cup. Alian brewed tea, made with chamomile leaf and peppermint, to help her sister sleep. By the time the sun dipped below the horizon, the little girl was resting and no longer released the contents of her stomach every few minutes. Alian curled up next to her baby sister, and they both slept on the furs. When Alian awoke, the ship was close to shore once more. Green, rocky crags split open into an outlet. When the dragon prow passed into the nest, Alian could see where the gods had drawn an invisible line in the water. She clearly saw where the sea ended and the river began. It was deep blue on one side and the murky brown of mud on the other. Kanut's ship was the first to move to shore, and after it had anchored, unloading began. The crew stacked everything from the ships on the beach, quickly tying all of the animals to the trees at the edge of the forest so they could graze on the tender grasses. "We will spend the night here," said Kanut, never giving Athene or Alian a second glance. Alian was sent with some of the children to bring wood for the fire. The clan draped large leather tarps from bushes and anchored them with stones, erecting makeshift sleeping shelters. The central fire was lit. Flames danced high into the dusky sky. The women prepared the meal. Alian helped with the smaller children, showing them how to draw circles in the sand, and they gathered more driftwood from the shoreline. After they had eaten, Kanut sat across from Alian at the fire. Reticent, he stared at her, as if he had something to say, but could not get it to come out. She put Athene to bed, and most of the others had settled in for sleep in preparation for the long day of travel ahead. Alian could not sleep. When she returned to the fire, her father called her to him, then patted the ground beside him. "Alian, it is time for me to tell you the truth. Do not interrupt. When I married Arok, you were already born." He looked off into some distant place that was alive only in his mind. Arok had a sister. Gretich was her name. Gretich of the red hair. She had been the lover of a great warrior in Eirin. She died, leaving you to be raised by Arok. When we met, Arok asked me to take you as my own, just as she had. For the sake of your birthright, I did as she wished. I was very young then, and in love. A glimmer of a smile hinted around his lips. O'Rourke and I married against my father's wishes. His face scowled at the remembrance. Forkbeard felt I had married with no gain, and only loss in providing for a woman who offered nothing, and a child who offered less. My union with O'Rourke brought none of the alliances to his kingship that he had wished for. Allian sat very still while he spoke. Her shoulders slumped. When he finished, her eyes went to the ground and stayed there. I had to have done something wrong. He lies because I've dishonored him in some way. What have I done? What have I done to have him tell me such things? Her mind whirled with questions. After a long moment, she lifted her eyes just in time to meet his and see him look away. Allian, I will not be coming back. Once I have settled you in Athene, I can no longer waste my time. Forkbeard has changed everything with his plans. My father will be King of England, Allian, and if I am to succeed him to the throne, I must be prepared to fight. I cannot drag children with me, especially heathen children. Having never met Forkbeard, Allian turned his name over in her mind. She drew her inner focus down on the King of Denmark. She could see him in her mind, tall like Canut, with the same white blonde hair and glowing steel blue eyes. He sat astride a stunning black stallion. The king rode with a group of other finely dressed men. Allian watched the vision unfold. His horse became wild. Forkbeard was thrown from the saddle. The fall was violent. The king would die. She knew this, without doubt. Canut cleared his throat. She was jarred to the present and tried to ignore what was to come. Her focus was on the now. Allian wanted to ask why. Why was he lying about her mother? Why he no longer wanted to be her father? But the words caught in her throat. She opened her mouth to speak and then closed it again, saying nothing. Tears welled in her eyes, and she rubbed them hard with the backs of her hands. She pulled her knees to her chest and rocked back and forth, willing this all to be a nightmare. When Canut spoke again, he said only that Athene was to be tended by Dubjila until she was of the age to be married. Until then, she would be known only by the blood of O'Rourke. He also said he would be leaving in 3 moons. He stood abruptly and began to walk away. It took all of the young woman's courage to follow him. Father! The words stuck in her throat and came out more strongly than she intended. She clenched her teeth. From a place deep inside, her anger and hurt erupted. I do not believe you. This is the killer of the gods speaking through you, and the cross of the Christians has poisoned your mind. You hide behind a king who will not die in battle, but from a fall from a horse? Abandon those who love you? Go. Do not let your daughters stop you from fighting your war. Canut rounded on her, turning so fast the hem of his brat whipped across her cheek. She took a step back. He reached for her, grabbed both of her shoulders. He shook her so hard she saw double. Allian was the last thing she heard before the back of his hand met her face and all went black. Someone must have carried Allian to the firs and laid her down by Athene. When Allian awoke, the pain in her head was so strong that she held her hands over her eyes. The swelling of her face made her skin feel stretched too tightly. Dubjila applied cool, damp cloths to Allian's bruised eye and puffy cheek. The healer rocked her eldest charge in her arms, swaying back and forth. She sang the song O'Rourke used to sing. Allian of the red hair, we hold you so dear. You came to us. The message is clear. Allian of the mark, it ties you to a new land. Seek its shores with the help of a man. More help you will find in the gods of our time. The wolf is your friend. He will seek you in time. Allian of the red hair, you grow with each breath. A woman you will be. A spirit walker that leads. Eve sat bolt upright in bed. The song still rang in her foggy mind. The slap still stung her face. She touched her cheek. Another dream which was far too real to forget and even far more frightening to remember. Kaz gave a meow, and she swung her feet off the side of the bed. He jumped to the floor, rubbing his face on her leg. Eve walked to the beveled mirror, expecting to see a girl with auburn hair, emerald green eyes, and freckled skin. What she saw instead was a 26-year-old, sandy-haired, dark green-eyed woman with a red eye and a swollen cheek, which was rapidly turning blue. Eve reached a wavering hand for the phone. Her entire body trembled. Her fingers instinctively pressed the memory button and then 01. Ring after ring, she waited. Andrea answered the phone. "Hello?" With trembling hands and a voice husky from sleep, Eve said, "Andrea, I need you. Can you come over? I'm not sure I can drive." The tone of Eve's voice must have scared Andrea because Eve heard a loud crash of a metal pan as it hit the floor. "Eve, is that you?" All she could say was, "Yes, bring an ice pack. Richard and I will be there in 20 minutes. Don't go anywhere." The click in Eve's ear told her that Andrea hung up, but Eve held the receiver for another minute before she finally set it in the cradle. The shaken woman reached for her journal and sat on the edge of the bed. She recorded the nightmare she had just had. Or maybe it had her. Thanks so much for joining me for this episode of The Mark of a Druid, and stop back again. Pick up the next episode at rhondacarpenter.com or themarkofadruid.com. So until next time, thanks and take care.